We're going to start with, they were just giving me a hard time. It's hard to be serious here. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me, a sinner. Help us to glorify you by carrying your message tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we're on to wise, but I want to, we have several people here relatively new in recovery, and I'm just going to give hopefully less than 30 minutes on what we're trying to do here. That was a joke, nobody laughed. All right, it's a tough crowd tonight for those listening to the podcast. We study this book because this is a textbook of recovery. It was written in 1939. On how to recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And there are specific directions in this book that if you go through the book and you do all the directions up to page 164, you won't drink again. In fact, if you do follow the directions continuously from the chapter, how it works, and into action, I don't think you'll drink again if you continue to do it. And so the key to recovery from alcoholism and being recovered is to have a relationship with God, and God gives you a power so that he gives you the choice not to drink each day. I'll never have the ability to choose not to drink on my own. I only get that through my relationship with God. And right, if I'm thinking of drinking, he'll say, bad idea, Michael. And so how do we get this right relationship with God? That's what's in this book. It's the 12 steps. They need to be worked in order. They make sense. The book goes through it. I have a site, experiencethebigbook.org. I've done 520 podcasts. You can find where I started the big book over and go right through it. We make a decision and after the first three steps that we're not going to play God anymore. Why?
It doesn't work.
And we're going to live a different way. And then steps 4 through 9 is where I break down the barriers so that God can work in my life. And I get right with my thinking in steps 4 and 5, and 6 and 7. I get right with the world in steps 8 and 9. And then I live in steps 10 and 11. And that's the world of the Spirit. I call it the Holy Spirit. And if I live in that world, I stay connected to God. Then I will have emotional sobriety, and I won't have to worry about physical sobriety. And so that's a little overview of what we're doing. We're on to wives. I'm back in the big book, and I'm going to cover to wives and family afterwards. And then the vision for you. I'm thinking about to employers, the highlights of that chapter, request to some of the members. And then we'll start the book over again with the cover. And I've done some podcasts at home. It's like sitting in my chair having a conversation. I don't know if they're good or bad, but I've done two on Fred, and I did Recovering Alcoholic, and I just did Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception. And I'm going to do the Jay Walker this week and just sit and give my thoughts on the insanity of the first drink. For those who have that problem. Into wives, it's too bad. We have a few new guys whose wives have told them to come here. And it's too bad that they're not here tonight, because we're going to see the classification of alcoholics, and we're going to see some advice on how the wife should deal with us, the importance of the book, and the importance of both the husband and the wife having a spiritual life. So we got to the bottom of page 108, and they're giving some description of how we look as an alcoholic to the person we're living with. This chapter is written for all those who are affected by alcoholism. That includes the alcoholic. We're affected by our alcoholism, aren't we? And wives, children, family members, employers, people who love us, people who want to see us find a solution to this problem. Now, they don't usually understand us, but they want us to find some help. Now, when this book was written, there was no AA and there was no Al-Anon. There was just 70 people sober, and they wrote this spiritual book using the principles of the Oxford Group, and they're writing this chapter to show us how we look as alcoholics, how they see us, and how they might be able to help us. There's some very good advice in here, and it would also may help us if I'm working with another alcoholic, how I might be able to help them. And it says, so they're giving us four categories of the problem with which the spouse or the husband might struggle. And the first one is your husband may be only a heavy drinker. Now, a heavy drinker is someone who doesn't have a spiritual illness. A heavy drinker is somebody who drinks too much, gets drunk, does all the things bad when they're drunk, likes alcohol, but if they're given sufficient reason to quit, they can on their own. Now, if you can't stop drinking on your own, then you may not be a heavy drinker. Stu was telling me his problems, and I said, well, Stu, you might just be a heavy drinker. This was 5 years ago, and his eyes lit up like, wow. And then within like 8 seconds, the reality sunk in. And I want to be a real alcoholic, because if I won't have be able to get the solution if I don't fully concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic. The first step in recovery is not the first step in the book. It's more about alcoholism. It said we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we're alcoholic. The idea that someday, somehow, we'll be like normal people has to be what? Smashed. And so I have to fully concede to my innermost self, there can't be any, that I'm an alcoholic. And most people don't know what makes them an alcoholic. So we have some new people. I'll tell you what makes me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is if I take alcohol, then I immediately set up the situation in my body where it craves a second drink. Now, I don't think most people know that they're craving the second drink. They just have it. And I had that from the beginning. Manischewitz wine, Passover Seder. It was like 13 or 14. I kept going upstairs to get more. And after that, Mom didn't leave the Manischewitz wine in the refrigerator. But I didn't know anything about it. And so I had that. If I think about drinking, I won't buy a little bottle, right? Because remember, there's a warning label on alcohol. It's very, very small. It says, this bottle will run out. You get it? And some people laugh. And so I have that problem. Now, the answer to that is not to put alcohol in my body, and then I won't have all the problems of getting drunk, right? And the problem with that is that I can't live sober and not drink. I don't have the power to do that. Well, that seems stupid. I seem pretty intelligent, don't I? I look good, great. But why can't I have a power not to drink? Because my mind's been damaged. And when I want to change the way I feel, my mind says, get a drink. Even though I have sworn off at 8 in the morning, at 5 in the afternoon, I'm in the liquor store. Now, how'd that happen? And I have willpower, and I have self-knowledge. Because self-knowledge and willpower won't work. Because right before I drink, my mind says, it's not good. Only thinks about what it's going to do for me, not to me. In fact, if you're a real alcoholic, just going to the liquor store, you feel better, right? If you're a drug addict, you got the drugs, you're going to get the drugs, you're already better. Because you know it's going to change the way you feel. So my real problem is that, not that I can't not take the first drink, my real problem is that I live a spiritual malady, a spiritual illness, in which I'm separated from God, I'm running a life run on self-will, and when I do that, I write the script for my life and how everybody should be in it. And it doesn't go well because I'm not God, and then I don't feel good. I get resentment, I get fears, I harm people. And so sober, I don't like the way I feel. And then my mind's damaged, and my mind says, alcohol will relieve this, Michael. You need a drink. Now, it doesn't always say that. It's just what we do. And so unless I find to live a treatment for my spiritual illness and my separation from God, and I live a spiritual life connected to God, then I won't be able to not drink. So the steps are how I get this pathway to the treasure. It's a treasure map to the treasure, which is my relationship with God. And God keeps me sober. And then I have to do it all of the day continuously. So I'm just trying to give you an idea of how this book works to get me the solution that gives me a power not to drink. Okay. So it says, your husband may be only a heavy drinker. His drinking may be constant or may be heavy only on certain occasion. Perhaps he spends too much money for liquor. It may be slowing him up mentally and physically, but he does not see it. Now remember, this was written in 1939. Prohibition ended in 33. But prohibition didn't keep alcoholics from drinking, did it? No, no. But he doesn't see that it's slowing him up. Sometimes he's a source of embarrassment to you and his friends. He is positive he can handle his liquor, right? Don't tell me what to do. I've got this. I've got control. Anybody ever say that? It does him no harm. The drinking is necessary in his business. Remember, Bill told Lois that he needed to drink because it gave him great philosophical insight into life. He would be insulted if he were called an alcoholic. This world is full of people like him. Some will moderate or stop altogether, and some will not. Of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics after a while. And I told you what makes you a true alcoholic. Loss of control once you drink, loss of the power to choose not to drink. And the reason that you have that condition is because you have a spiritual illness. So of those who keep on, a good number will become true alcoholics after a while. Well, we all start out as heavy drinkers, right? And we enjoy it. Anybody do that? But at some point, we cross that line. And once we cross that line and become a real alcoholic, we can't go back. And so the second classification is your husband's showing a lack of control. And he's also showing a lack of choice because he's unable to stay on the water wagon even when he wants to. Now, that's kind of depressing. When you want to quit, you can't. Anybody ever had that? He gets entirely out of hand when drinking. He admits this is true, but is positive he will do better. Now, the key word is that he's going to do better. Now, we're not bad people. We just had the wrong manager, me. And when I manage the world, I can't keep from drinking alcohol. And I can't do better. I always tried to do better. Did anybody say, I'm not going to get irritable at work? I'm not going to get upset with the staff? And then you're there 20 minutes and, oh, these idiots, and look what they did again. I used to do that a long time ago. I haven't done it for a while, and I don't want to go back to that. He has begun to try, with or without your cooperation, various means of moderating or trying staying dry. Maybe he's beginning to lose his friends. His business may suffer somewhat. He is worried at times, is becoming aware that he cannot drink like other people. He sometimes drinks in the morning. And through the day also to hold his nervousness in check. Anybody nervous people here? Anybody got bad nerves? Well, the nervousness is just worry. It's just anxiety from, we feel unease. We feel dis-ease from God and we feel ill at ease. And we want to, and it's just underlying, and it's, no matter how good things go, it never goes away. The only thing that treats that is a different relationship with God, living in a different world, the world where God's in charge and not me. He is remorseful after serious bouts and tells you he wants to stop. And is that always true? He may want to stop for a short period of time. But when he gets over the spree, the ego rebuilds. He begins to think once how more he can drink moderately next time. Now, we have a nice new man, and he was told to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, which is really good. But you just drink a lot of coffee. And the point of the meetings is to find the right relationship with God. Going to meeting and meeting someone and having them take you through the steps. They didn't have meetings when this book was written. They had three groups and they had one meeting a week. And you won't see meetings in this book. You won't see any of that. Because meetings is good, but you want to meet God. You want to have a relationship with God. And the idea of the meetings is a fellowship and of people who are alcoholics. But what you really want to be in is the fellowship of the Spirit, where everybody's seeking God together. And AA has changed a lot from the beginning, and things are different nowadays. But the book's the same, the solution's the same, the steps are the same. And the directions in the book haven't changed. And I think 90 meetings in 90 days is good, especially if you're new. It makes you admit you're an alcoholic every day. You go somewhere where people at least are talking and trying to stay sober, and you might meet some people who offer to help you and take you through this book. And then when you see somebody who's there and is going to 90 meetings in 90 days, you offer to reach out to them and you help them. But if you don't go to any meetings, that's not going to work either. But the solution is in the steps. The solution is not in the meetings. Does this make sense? So he begins to think how much he could drink moderately next time. We think this person is in danger. These are the earmarks of a real alcoholic. Perhaps he can still tend the business very well. He has by no means ruined everything. As we say among ourselves, he wants to want to stop. Anybody know what that means? We can talk about it. He wants to want to stop. He really wants to be done, but he's not there yet. You get it? And so he's not admitted 100% complete defeat, 100% powerless. One thing I didn't mention is this book is written for not people who are having a bad day. It's not written for people who aren't getting along with their wives and their drinking's a problem. This is a book for people who see the truth that they'll never be able to stop drinking on their own, 100% powerless, can never manage their life again. This is for people who are completely defeated. And that's why it's written in these terms. If you're not completely defeated, that people won't follow through on this. They won't call me, they won't work the steps. I've seen that over and over again. How do you get completely defeated? You keep drinking. And hopefully the grace of God will come into you and you'll have that moment where you can say, you know, I'm done. And there are people here who've had that moment. I had that moment a long time ago and I was done. I was completely done. And I still remember how bad I felt. I don't want to ever feel that way again. And my life's great today. Who would have thought years later how it's turned out? And that was all because of God. The only credit I take is for following directions and continuing to do the actions. But, you know, I'm not any better than the person who doesn't make it. We're not good or bad. It's just, am I allowing God to work in my life or not? It's that simple. Am I seeking him constantly in everything I do? Have I admitted that without him I'm nothing? I'm going on this, but does this make sense? I mean, this is the deal. We have some people who are, you know, just early in recovery days. Three, this husband has gone much further than husband number two. Husband number two is in real danger. And they may never make it here. Most alcoholics never make it to AA. Or they'll come for a couple meetings and then we don't see them again. But most people don't even make it here. This is a disease that affects a large amount of the population, and what, less than 1% of the people come to AA stay sober for 10 years. Probably 0.05% stay sober 10 years of all the people who come, and then there are all those people who never even get here, so it's a very small number. We're always running out of 30, 60, 90 day coins, but we have plenty of 5-year coins. And we have plenty of, you get it? And so it's sad. And I want to be there to help anybody that wants to be helped. And that's the reason that I still go to meetings, because I need to be there to remember I'm an alcoholic and I can't do it without God, and who will I find to help at that meeting? I talked to my minister today. I said, well, maybe there'll be somebody here tonight that I can help. You don't know. And he said, feed the sheep. He loves the program. And he's in Maine. And he said, feed the sheep. And I said, amen. So husband three's gone further than husband number two. I don't think I'm going to finish the chapter tonight. No. That's a joke. I say that every meeting, and they know I'm not going to cover much. I usually cover 4 pages, maybe 5. So once, like number two, he became worse. It's a progressive disease. See, the heavy drinker becomes drinker number two, and then drinker number two becomes drinker number three. And you don't really want to become drinker number four, classification number four, because those people are at the real end. So number three, his friends have slipped away, his home is a near wreck, and he cannot hold the position. Maybe the doctor has been called in, and the weary rounds of sanitariums and hospitals has begun. They used to lock alcoholics up. And just so we would be safe, we wouldn't harm ourselves. He admits he cannot drink like other people, but does not see why. Isn't that a son of a gun? Why can't I drink like normal people? And he clings to the notion that he will yet find a way to do so. He may have come to the point where he desperately wants to stop but cannot. I can't emphasize the gift of desperation is so important. That we realize we're like a drowning man, and we will reach out. If I'm drowning and somebody puts a hand out, you'll grab it, won't you? And so we want to be in that desperate situation and grab the hand, and then if we're helping them, we want to have our hand out. Because it says on page 20, eight, that the flimsy reed, with the desperation of a drowning man, the flimsy reed becomes the hand of God. With the desperation of a drowning man, I'm going to look it up. I'm getting old. I'm pretty close, but forgive me. People are going to stop listening. Oh, no. It says, we in our turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of a drowning man. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, if you prefer, a design for living that really works. And that's what you get in AA. You get a design for living that works. My design of living when I came in here didn't work. And when you're new, we don't care what your design of living plan is, because it's not going to work. The plan of living that works is is in this book. The steps. His case presents additional questions which we shall try to answer for you, but you can be quite hopeful of a situation like this. And the reason why you can be hopeful is because this individual is beginning to see the truth, his complete powerlessness. And you know why he clings to the notion that there's a way, and I write, needs the relief. And when you have the spiritual awakening, the question is, why would you want to drink? See, once you've had the spiritual awakening, you would wonder why you ever wanted to drink, because your life now is so much different and better. Four, you may have a husband of whom you completely despair. He has been placed in one institution after another. He is violent or appears definitely insane when drunk. Sometimes he drinks on the way home from the hospital. Perhaps he had delirium tremens. Now, I was in medical school in like 1974 or 5, in our junior year during the psych rotation, we went to Spring Grove Sanitarium, which doesn't exist anymore, because that's before they discontinued all the medical care for the mentally ill, the institutions. And it was, they had a whole ward of alcoholics. And I went in and listened, And the counselor said, most of these people, and they told their stories. It was really powerful. I wasn't an alcoholic yet. I was on my way. And the man said, you know, most of these people won't make it. Once they get out, they won't make it past the liquor store 2 blocks down. And I said, wow. And then the guy with me, he says, you know, my dad's a recovering alcoholic. He's gone to AA, and a long time. And he says AA really works. And I remember that. That was 1974 or 5. And it says, perhaps he has DTs. Doctors may shake their heads and advise you to have him committed. Maybe you've already been obliged to put him away. This picture may not be as dark as it looks. Many of our husbands were just as far gone, yet they got well. So you never give up on someone. You continue to reach out, and you never know when the grace of God's going to come in, and you're going to see that look in their eyes, and you know something's different. And I've only been doing this meeting for 14 years, and I've seen a lot of people who just kept coming in and back and going, and they couldn't stay sober. And then one time they'd come back and it would be different. And I've seen four or five of these, six or seven of these people, and they're sober years now. So you don't know what it's going to take. You always want to be there for them. But remember, I can't make them sober. I don't have the power. I can just be there to walk the path of spiritual progress with them, to show them what works for me, what's working today. So let's go back to husband number one. Oddly enough, he is often difficult to deal with. He enjoys drinking. It stirs his imagination. His friends feel closer over a highball. Perhaps you enjoy drinking with him yourself when he doesn't go too far. You have passed happy evenings together chatting and drinking before your fire. Perhaps you both like parties which would be dull without liquor. We have enjoyed such evenings ourselves. We had a good time. We know all about liquor as a social lubricant. Some, but not all of us, think it has advantages when reasonably used. And liquor becomes not only a social lubricant, it becomes a spiritual lubricant. And it becomes your higher power. You're thinking, you're new, you're intelligent. You think you're able to have jobs and this and that, make decisions, but you can't. You're giving power to a liquid in a bottle. And think about it. Alcohol has become your higher power. It controls your life. Why? Because you know it gives you relief from living without God, living sober. The first principle of success, and this is for wives, and this is really good. And this is true for how we should deal with the human race as alcoholics. How should you deal with people? Well, the first principle of success in anything is that you should never be angry. Remember, anger is a dubious luxury of normal people. But for the alcoholic, it is what? Poison. It's poison. It kills us, anger. Because when I'm angry, whatever I'm angry at has become my God. And God can't work in my life. And if I stay angry, then he can't work, then I have no power not to drink. And most people drink over anger. And it's usually driven by fear. And so fear and anger are the killers. Even though your husband becomes unbearable, any of you have an unbearable husband or wife, you have to leave him temporarily, you should, if you can, go without rancor. Go without bitterness. So you shouldn't be angry. We shouldn't be angry as alcoholics with other people, God's children. And we shouldn't have bitterness towards them. Patience and good temper are most necessary. Remember, love and tolerance of others is our code of living. So the first principle is never be angry. If you leave, leave without bitterness. And have patience and good temper. The next thing is that you should never tell him what he must do about his drinking. I don't really tell people what they should do about their drinking. I make suggestions of what they might do so they don't have to drink again. And it's usually from the viewpoint of what I've done. And we read the book together. If he gets the idea that you're a nagger or killjoy, your chance of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. Now, you could be sober and have a wife and nagger. I've heard that. I've done that on occasion. And my chance of accomplishing anything is zero. And usually my motives are good, and I'm just trying to help her. But she pointed out I don't have to walk in the kitchen every time she's cooking and ask her if she made it crispy enough, if she used the right seasoning, blah, 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 blah. It never occurred to me. Nobody's laughing, but I try not to do it. I have a whole list of things that I shouldn't do. He will use that as an excuse to drink more. My wife and I get along great, but you know, I have issues. We all do, right? And in fact, the things that we do that drive other people crazy, we don't even notice. She told me one time, you know, I'm not 5 years old. I can make my own decisions. I said, really? Okay, great. He will tell you he is misunderstood. This may lead to lonely evenings for you. He may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. So you don't want to give them an excuse to blame you for their drinking. Now, I've worked with a lot of people who, on their resentment list, usually have two or three people that, because of them, they drank, they were terrible, blah, 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 blah. It's usually nonsense. They never usually did the things that they thought, and the way they reacted was just so they could transfer blame, so they had an excuse for self-pity, so they could drink. Be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relationship with your children or friends. So set boundaries. And what, how this applies to us is, don't let somebody else's behavior determine how I'm going to be with other people. And that's very hard. They need your companionship and your help. It is possible to have a full and useful life though your husband continues to drink. And this is where Al-Anon's been helpful. And remember, I can have a full and useful life, and it doesn't depend on other people. It depends on me and my relationship with God, right? That other people, I can't change them. I can only change the way I react. We know women who aren't afraid, even happy under these conditions. And it says, do not set your heart on reforming your husband, because you can't. And if you're married and you're in recovery, don't set your heart on changing your wife. It's not going to happen. She is who she is, or change the husband. He is who he is. Does this make sense? Because then you're making them your higher power, and you're only going to be happy if they're behaving a certain way. And you can be, you could be content without having other people meet your needs. You may be unable to do so no matter how hard you try. And you can't reform an alcoholic. But here's a really powerful paragraph. We know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you will save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them. And it's your heartbreak. Your husband may come to appreciate your reasonableness and patience. And remember, it talks about us with the family. We have to change. We have to live the spiritual life. They'll see the change in us, and then they may change, and they may want what we have. It says, this may lay the groundwork for a friendly talk about his alcoholic problem. Try to have him bring up the subject himself. Be sure you're not critical during such a discussion. And here's a great thought. Attempt instead to put yourself in his place. And I have to remember that if I'm working with somebody sober 5 days or a week or a month. You know, where was I? You want to try to take it easy with them, but you want to be firm. You want to give them firm directions, but you want to be kind and loving. It says, let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical. That's a key point. And now you can get, I've had people come to me whose husbands were having problems and say, you know, could he talk to you? Could you call him? And so that's why it's not, you don't have to be afraid if people know you're an alcoholic, because you may have the, you will not regret the past and shut the door on it, because my alcoholism could be the key to helping somebody else. And I've had that happen at work. When a discussion does arise, you might suggest he read this book. And that's why I wanted to get to this before I quit, or at least the chapter on alcoholism. And they talk about the book here, and him reading the book, studying the book, and telling me you've been worried that perhaps needlessly you think you ought to know the subject better, as everyone should have a clear understanding of the risks he takes if he drinks too much. And it says, show him you have confidence in his power to stop or moderate. Don't want to be a wet blanket, that you only want him to take care of your health. Thus, he may succeed in interesting him in alcoholism or in the treatment. And get him to be willing to see the truth about himself. And you do that through talk. kind talk. If I have a new person, I try to talk to them so they might be able to see the truth about their situation and see what the solution might be for them. And I tell them the truth of my situation. And he says he probably has several alcoholics among his own acquaintance. You might suggest that you both take an interest in them. Drinkers like to help other drinkers. And remember, alcoholics, one of our important things that keeps us sober is working with another alcoholic, contact with other alcoholics. And this is where meetings are very helpful. Get people into the fellowship, make them feel welcome, have them feel part of something. It's and so that they'll want to stay connected and then eventually get them into the steps. If this interest, and if this kind of approach does not catch your husband's interest, it may be best to drop the subject, but after a friendly talk to your husband, will usually revive the he will usually revive the topic himself. This may take patient waiting, but it will be worth it. Meanwhile, you might try to help the wife of another serious drinker. If you act upon these principles, your husband may stop or moderate. And now they're going to pick up with husband number two. That was all about the husband number one, who may be the heavy drinker, may be becoming a real alcoholic. So I'm gonna stop there, and we'll open it up for some discussion, and we'll pick up on the middle of 112. Thank you, guys.